I'm Elsa Biniel, and I'm from Namibia. I'm a student in New Jersey, East Orange Oxala College. I'm studying occupational therapy, and I just finished my first year, so I'll be a sophomore next semester.
My name is Loretta Maton, and I'm from Namibia too. I'm studying at Texas Lutheran College in Seguin's, very small place, and this is my first year too. And I'm studying elementary education.
Reinhold Mouton, and all of you guys probably know where I'm from. I'm at Texas Lutheran College too. Recently changed my major from biology to theology, so I might change it again in the future, I don't know. That's about it. You can start.
I'm going to start off my title is, I'm going to tell you more about Namibia, where it's concentrated, and I know most of the people here in Holden Village knows where Namibia is, but when I came over, people asked me, from where are you? And I said, from Namibia. And they asked me, where is that place? So, but most of the people here knows where it is, but I'm going to tell you more about it. Namibia is along the southwest coast of Africa, and it's a land the size of California, Oregon, and Washington State combined. It shares long borders with Angola in the north. You can see on the map where Angola is, here in the north. And in the east is Botswana, the south it's South Africa, and in the west it's the Atlantic Ocean. The Namib Desert in the central plateau and the is in the central plateau and the Kalahari Desert. Despite its desolation, the Namib Desert contains enormous riches. It has made Namibia since 1908 the world's largest producer of diamonds. It also contains large quantities of uranium, which you find in Swakopmund. Here on the map, you can see Swakopmund there. Swakopmund, you find the uranium at the Rossing mine. This is a mine which is the largest open pit mine in the world. It produces over 5,000 tons a year of uranium dioxide, which is used by nuclear reactors in South Africa, South Aquitaine, and South African and Anglo-American also possess uranium concessions in Namibia. About 90% of the consumer goods in Namibia come from South Africa. These figures contribute to explain why South Africa defies international pressure to grant independence to Namibia, as it might endanger the existing economic structure entirely favorable to South African capitals. Commercial farming in Namibia has developed into two main branches. The first is the cattle on the central grasslands north of Windhoek. Windhoek is the capital in Namibia, capital city. And the Karakul sheep rearing in the south. There is very little crop cultivation. There is some dry land maize cropping where rains are just sufficient, and elsewhere small quantities of cereals, vegetables, and fruit are cultivated under irrigation, but this amounts to little more than the present of agriculture production. Because much of this huge country is desert, the population is very small. It's about less than 2 million people in Namibia. The Namibians comprise about 11 ethnic groups. And the largest of these are the Ovambos, the Damras, and the Hereros. The number of natives rejecting ethnic divisions, which are reinforced by apartheid to identify themselves as Namibians is constantly growing. We have about 12 different kind of languages, and about these 12 languages, Afrikaans is the official language that most of the people speak Afrikaans. And some people, you find some people that speaks German, because the German, they are left over from German colonials, because the Germans, when was it, 1915, the Germans tried to invade Namibia, but South Africa came in, and the Germans lost it, and they had to move away. So these Germans are left over from the German colonial times, and these are the only German people that speak German. And then you have most of the countries, 70,000 whites originally come from South Africa, and are part of that country's ruling African group. Yet despite the bounty of the land, Namibia's people are among the poorest in the world. The story of Namibia is one that should be understood by American Christians, for it is a story about faith and suffering and a people's struggle, and people struggle to be free. Struggle to be free. Now I'm going to ask Elsie to go further with the church in America, the position of the church.
Before I start, I want to hear, could you hear? So that I can speak loud or whatever.
Yeah.
And if you have questions, we will be glad to answer it, but maybe you can save that for the end. But if it is emergency questions, like, then we will be glad to answer that too. I'm going to talk about the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Namibia. It's ELCIN, like ELCA. And ELCIN, formerly the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Ovambu Kavango. And that was ELOC, has a membership of 360,000 people. More than 110 pastors and 220 evangelists. The evangelist duties are to give services in the absence of, in the absenteeism of pastors, and they visit people and pray for people, for sick people in the hospitals and in the jail. They also do house visits or visitings. Many people in the U.S. have asked me about Christianity in Namibia. Christian missionaries were among the first white people to live permanently in Namibia, bringing with them their schools, health care, but also the modern technology. Today, about 90% of all Namibians are Christians, and plus minus 80% are Lutherans. The role of the church in the politics. The ELC has a very strong and important stand in the politics. People consider the Lutheran Church as a SWAPO church. SWAPO stands for Southwest African People's Organization. They see it as a SWAPO church because the Lutheran Church is a member of the Council of Churches in Namibia. And the Council of Churches is the Lutherans, the Lutheran Church, the Catholic Church, and the Anglican. Except for the people in the north, the pastors are the only people that really know about the real situation in the northern part of Namibia. But they are not allowed to talk about it, because if they start to talk politics in the church, people stand up and they leave the church. You are not allowed to talk about politics or anything bad about the government at all. And this is why we were so overwhelmed when we came to the United States. And it was too much for us, because everything is open, you read about everything in the media, and we learned a lot about the politics in our own country. So when we go back, we have to go and teach the people that don't know. And when I say the people that don't know, then it is the people in the central and in the south. So we have to go and learn them and teach them about the suffering of the black people in the north. Some people don't even know where is the north of Namibia, and they live in Namibia. In the face of injustice and suffering, it has fallen to Namibian Christian churches to bear witness to the horrors of South African rule and to act as a national voice for reconciliation, justice, and independence. Working together as the Council of Churches in Namibia, the country's main Christian churches, the Lutheran, Roman Catholic, and African Methodist, have worked and prayed for an end to the war and South African withdrawal, for an end to racial discriminatory laws and practices, and for fair and free elections. Today, Namibia are closer than ever before to their goal, and our goal is independence, free and fair elections. But Iscariot's witness has made the Christian church a target for repression. Church leaders have been arrested, deported, and tortured. Traditional church life, in the form of worship services and the performance of routine pastoral duties, have been subjected to continual harassment. The outspoken Lutheran printing press in the north was bombed twice. The seminary, the church school, and hospital were also bombed in 1981. Church workers and their families have been detained and even killed by the South African police. That was just all of the church and a little bit about the life in the northern part of Namibia. And so now I will talk about education. Young people have suffered seriously from the problems in education. Teacher-student ratios have been high, and a majority of teachers have been limited qualifications. Most of them have grade 12, and imperfect knowledge of English, but they have to teach us English. Buildings and equipment are also scarce, and classes are often held outside with a few supplies. The syllabuses used have been South African and have been increasingly militarized with South African people, often acting as teachers. Another aspect of militarization is military and police camps near and on the schools. And the behaviors of the uniformed staff, the army, toward the teachers and students. And the soldiers rape the students, but the government, they don't do anything about it, because it's the army and they are supposed to protect us. This was the basic cause of the 1988 school strike, which led to 5,000 students who fled out of the country. What is the army? It is the law that all white people, and the German, and colored, and a few black tribes above the age of 18, I have to go to the army. And it's usually for a period of 2 years. And if they don't go, they will get jailed or even killed. The army doesn't call on the Ovambo tribe, and this is usually the people in the north, because they fight against that people. But the army is a future for the people that couldn't make it on school. And even some of the people in the north, they know what is going on, but they still go to the army for future for them, because the army has a good salary, so then they have money. And the people usually see them as traitors, and they are the enemies of their own people. The young men go to the army for months without seeing their family. We don't know what is going on the borders, but we know that the Boers brainwashed our people. But God knows too. Soldiers are not allowed to talk about their jobs because they are totally brainwashed. And when the Boers tell them not to talk about it, they don't. Our friends that are in the army, you will never hear them talk about the army. They go away for months and we miss them, and then they come back and they don't say anything about it. They kill their fellow Namibians in the north because they are under the impression that the people in the north are our enemy. And now Randolph will tell you more about the political situation in Namibia.
Yeah. Let me just get this. I'm going to talk about the history and then talk about the events of most recently. Let me take you all back to a couple of years before World War I. This is when the German Second Reich of Bismarck and Wilhelm I set out to occupy the still unconquered territories of Africa. Namibia was one of its targets, but the territory was not uninhabited, so the Germans massacred the Shep, Herding, Eroro, and Ovambo ethnic groups. The country became strategically valuable with the discovery of rich deposits of iron ore, lead, zinc, copper, and diamonds, along with more recently discovered strategic metals such as tungsten, vanadium, cadmium, and large quantities of uranium. When conflicts between imperialist powers led to the outbreak of World War I, the British invaded Namibia from South Africa. At the end of the war, Namibia became a trust territory of the League of Nations, assigned to the South African Union as a, quote, a sacred mission confided by our civilization to promote to the utmost the material and moral well-being of its inhabitants. At the end of World War II in 1947, South Africa formally announced at the United Nations its intention to annex the territory. The United Nations, which had inherited from the League of Nations the responsibility over trust territories, opposed the project, arguing that the African inhabitants of Southwest Africa have not yet achieved political autonomy. Until 1961, the United Nations insisted on this point year after year, but the pronouncements were systematically ignored by the apartheid regime of South Africa. Between 1961 and 1968, the United Nations tried to annul the Namibian trusteeship and establish the country's independence. Local pressure, however, was ineffective, and the Namibian people, led by Southwest African, led by SWAPO, chose to fight for their freedom. Like she mentioned earlier, SWAPO stands for Southwest African People Organization. Now, according to what I heard, when most Americans heard organizations which ends with people's organization, they think about communism. But I just want to tell you that this is not communism,
nor is it democracy. We would rather say that this organization is a kind of like a social group, but not communism or democracy. We don't take that kind of stand here. In 1968, the United Nations finally declared illegal the South African occupation of the country, now internationally known as Namibia. In December 1978, South Africa held elections in Namibia in order to establish an autonomous government as the first step toward independence. But they did that without United Nations observers. They did it with apartheid troops occupying the territory and without SWAPO participation. These elections had no credibility, and the liberation movement announced it would continue its struggle until total independence is achieved. While negotiations continued on the diplomatic level to hold United Nations supervised elections, on May 21st, 1979, the South African regime decided to change National Assembly, elected in 1978, into a constituent assembly. This evidence designed to ignore the United Nations and prepare a formal independence for Namibia to secure the continuation of the racist system. After the independence of Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe is kind of like northwest from Namibia. Now, after the independence of Zimbabwe in 1980, the idea that full independence for Namibia is inevitable in the long run has become widespread within international spheres. Foreign investors, mostly transnational mining companies, have increased their pressure on two particular points. On the one hand, to force the South African government to negotiate earnestly for the peaceful transition, and on the other hand, to obtain SWAPO guarantees that there would be no further expropriations. As a result, South Africa has not only refused to seek a negotiated settlement for the independence of Namibia, but has also increased its military budget by 30% to pay for a campaign against the Army for the Popular Liberation of Namibia linked to SWAPO. During late 1982 and early 1983, fighting intensified along the border between Namibia and Angola. Now, the independence of Angola in 1975 radically changed the Namibian struggle for freedom as it provided SWAPO with a friendly rear guard. The fighting also spread to the south, with SWAPO forces tagging daring attacks within the Iron Triangle close to the city of Grootfontein. Now, Grootfontein is kind of like north somewhere on the map. Anyway, the triangle of Grootfontein, where the main military forces of South Africa are concentrated. Now, the racists have also experienced divisions between different factions interested in gaining political evidence from the Namibian. While the Pretoria government has tried to neutralize the ultra-racist opposition, it also attempts to maintain the apartheid system in Namibia as a means of guaranteeing the profits of the small and medium Afrikaner businessmen who cast their votes to keep the National Party in power. The DTA, the winner of the 1978 elections, have drawn apart from apartheid and seek the favor of the large transnational companies. Now, the DTA stands for Democratic Turnhill Aliens. Now, this group is, this aliens captured 41 of the 50 seats in the election organized by South Africa in 1978. without foreign observers, without the United Nations observers. Thus they hope, this organization hope to appear as a viable conservative option in the eyes of the world public opinion when Namibia becomes independent. In February 1984, Angola, north of Namibia, Angolese and South African government representatives met at the Zambian capital. Zambia, where is Zambia? Zambia is somewhere in Africa.
Next to. Zambia is next to Botswana.
Yeah, over there. These representatives met at the Zambian capital, Lusaka, in order to settle the war in southern Africa and succeed to withdraw South African troops stationed in southern Angola in exchange for a ceasefire. That same year in May, SWAPO delegates and representatives from other Namibian political parties met with the South African spokesman, but the uncompromising attitude of the Pretoria's negotiation blocked all possibilities. Now Pretoria is where the big guys of the South African government is stationed at. They were there. Okay, finally, in 1989, the peace plan for the elections of Namibia is going on. South Africa finally agreed for the independence of Namibia. Elections are going to take place around the 6th of November, and the registration is going to take place at the 4th of September. Now the problem with this gives the Namibian students that are in America a problem, because we would like to vote too, and we are just hundreds and hundreds of students over here, and the period between registration and election is too wide, and we just cannot lose that much time for just to go home for the elections. That's kind of a problem for us, and we really want to believe that this elections, this independence is really going to happen, but we just do not trust South Africa, and nor do we trust the United Nations, because if the United Nations would have took a stand a long time ago, way in the past, none of this wouldn't have happened. You know, the United Nations is kind of like, we don't know on what side. It seems like the United Nations are on the side of South Africa, because it is helping South Africa, and South Africa is just doing whatever it wants to do. So, any questions?
I want to say,
who are the candidates
the possible candidates that I can think of right now, I'm not sure who it is, it's probably Sam Nujoma.
For SWAPO.
Yeah, probably P.W. Botha, the South African president, and then probably Pat Botha, his brother. I really don't know. I can just think about those.
When we ate dinner, someone asked me, do all of you look like this, and she did this, and I think it was because Africa is a country for black people, and because we are light-skinned, and then she asked if all of us look like this in Namibia. But the people we are called coloreds, because when the Europeans went to Africa, they mixed with the native Africans, and this is how we got there. How did we get the opportunity to study in the United States? We applied for scholarships to the Lutheran Church in Namibia, and they chose 20. They choose 20 students every year, and then the ERCA, the Lutheran Church in America, they sponsored us. They pay for our trips when we come for our tickets, and then they will pay, and then we will stay here for 2 years, and then we will go home, then we will, they will pay for the tickets again, they pay for our books, for everything, and they give us a stipend of $200 every month.
And it's only 2 years that you get to stay? So
no, we will go home and visit for 3 months, and then we will come back and finish the other 2 years.
Okay.
And before we came, we had to sign a contract, an agreement that we will return to Namibia after 4 years. Because I'm sure that many Namibians will change their minds and not go home because of the nice things here and there.
But if you can, if you find another scholarship, you can come, you have to go back. You can stay there for like 3 months or however you want to, how long you want to stay. And then after that, if you have another scholarship in the United States, you can come back. They can change your the passport you have. They can change the date to here, and then you can come back to the United States and finish your study. Studies and then go back again. Or if you want to marry, whatever you want to do,
stay.
Become American.
You had a question.
Again and again, we hear in the United States that SWAPO is in fact communist. I know you've referred to that before, and I've heard people again and again speak of that at Namibia, but I would like for you, do you have any kind of credible speech or talk that can help convince people that indeed that these are legitimate revolutionaries, even as our own people were legitimate revolutionaries 200 years ago fighting off the English rule? Do you have any further speaking from your own experience?
Okay, like I said, okay. SWAPO. We in Namibia, okay, we fight against the South African government, but we are not enough, so we are seeking for help. That's why we got help from the Cubans, and that's probably where most of the people get the impression that SWAPO might be communist, but that is not true. It's just, I don't know, it's just...
I'm sure South Africa try to bring the world under the impression that SWAPO is communist, because SWAPO, all the black, or the most black people are SWAPO, and the most black people, the largest group of people, they are black. It's a small amount of whites, a small amount of coloreds, a small amount of German, and the most black people are SWAPO, and they fight against the government. And the government are afraid that SWAPO will win the elections, so they have to fight hard. They kill daily hundreds of students and people in the north, but the people in Windhoek, the people in the central part of Namibia and in the south part of Namibia, we never hear about it and we never read about it.
Yeah, sure, we read about it, but the problem is that the newspapers we got tells a lot of lies. They always said that SWAPO's fault, and the people believe it.
Yeah.
And then you hear that there's people that got shot, they are dead, and then the government said that it was SWAPO that killed them. You hear daily, you hear that how many white people got killed on the border. But you never hear how many black people died also. It's just the white people, and then all the problems, they just put it on SWAPO. It's SWAPO's fault, and that's it. And the people believe in that. They just read this newspaper. But there's another newspaper, the Namibian, that tells the truth. But I don't know if the people doesn't know about that newspaper. They just read this.
Yeah, there are one newspaper, they call it the Namibian. And this is what I was talking about, the office that they bombed, because it printed politics. You will never, Did it answer your question?
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was reading recently about the coming election, and it said that the candidates had been selected by South African government. Now, is that true? these names that you just named off, are they the ones, have they been chosen by the South African government?
The DTA candidates. Yeah, surely they are. They're the South African government.
But
then, SWAPO probably choose, like, right. San Nyoma or whoever.
Will the election be of a president or and representatives, or will the representatives choose? Is that determined?
The what? That's
the election, yeah. Will that be of who writes the constitution for Namibia?
I know, I got something here about that.
But we have to vote for president.
And if SWAPO okay. receives a certain percentage of the vote, then it will have...
And it will still, if SWAPO have, I think, more than what it needs to be. Okay, anyway, South African Administrator General released two draft laws. One of them said, South Africa will convene, administer, and have ample opportunity to influence by rule and statute the activities of the Assembly as it writes the country's independence constitution. And the second one, all questions in the Assembly, which has 72 members, shall be determined by a decision of at least 48 members. And if it's South Africa, then we still have a lot of problems.
How is that Assembly chosen?
The Assembly? I really don't know.
We don't know. We don't hear about it. We don't read about it too.
I can just, SWAPO has written a constitution and copies are in the States, I know. I've seen copies. So SWAPO has prepared that, a constitution that they will use if they win.
Does Windhoek, even if independence is granted, still stay as part of South Africa? Isn't that your port city?
No, Walvis Bay is the
yeah,
port.
Yeah, yeah, right. Okay. That's still part of South Africa?
Yeah, it'll stay part of South Africa.
So the biggest port in your country will still be in South Africa?
Yeah, the biggest and the only one.
The only one.
Yeah. So we don't have a port right now. If we get our independence, we still have to go through South Africa. We will have to pay them a lot of money to get our stuff and to trade with other countries.
Walvis Bay will, after independence, it will create another problem, another big problem. But right now, I don't think we quite care about it right now. All we care about now is the independence. We want to concentrate on that. And then later, after we get that, we might fight for the main fort.
Yeah, many Namibians say we don't want independence without Walvis Bay. And then others say, we want our independence, and then we can fight for Walvis Bay later.
Another geographic question. If you look at a road map of Namibia, don't all roads sort of run north and south, such that you sort of get pushed into getting things from South Africa, such that the major forms of transportation, railway systems, go from Namibia to South Africa? Not really to Botswana
right.
or Angola.
Yeah, you are right, exactly. Yeah,
so
we have to go through South Africa if we want to go anywhere.
Yeah, because of the
outside
port and
Namibia.
The transportation system on the ground.
Yeah.
So it sort of makes the independence challenging.
Yeah.
I have some positive and negative feelings about one thing that was covered a little bit ago. When you said the ELCA pays for bringing them over here.
Yeah.
I said, oh, good. We are the ELCA, our representatives thereof. And we oftentimes need to explain to our people when funds are short what good things are being done. So that's positive. Then I was a little concerned when you said, well, maybe we're going back and maybe we're not going back. what is the general practice? Do most of the students who come here go back to work in their country or not?
Yes, most of them go back to serve the country. The Lutheran Church have a lot of private schools, and they need that people. That most of the people go back and teach or do something in that small countries, where just what black people lose, because they need.
The general attitude anyway is to go back, I can assure you.
Yeah, we are like 200 students, or 100 plus minus 100 students in New York. And I didn't hear one student say, I'm not going up. All of them.
Well, that's helpful
dream to
me,
go
and I'm probably everybody else too.
And if Namibia is important to us, we will go back, because we know that they need us.
Is there any, what's their attitude toward Russia and its expansionism? Is there any fear of Russia? And how would you feel to be under their domination rather than, say, South Africa?
I don't want to be under South Africa because of all the killings that happens daily. But I don't think the Namibians want to be under Russia too. I don't think they want to be communists too. This will be very hard to fight too.
I would rather be communist than under the South African government. Because we have been just living, you know, under discrimination, under all these racist problems. And at least if we live under communism, we will all be equal. We will be treated equal. We will have equal education. We will have freedom of speech, freedom of... maybe
no,
not.
Not
maybe not.
Freedom
but anyway...
No.
I'm sorry. But anyway, we will at least be treated equal.
Are there any Cuban troops in Namibia?
They
were through.
Yeah,
I know they're in Angola, but are they also
in Angola?
They were through from Angola too.
There was from Angola also.
Were there Cuban troops in Namibia?
No, they were.
The
Cuban troops were in Namibia, in Angola, and then they agreed that the Cuban troops had to withdraw out of Angola so that Namibia can have independence. So I don't know what does that has to be with Namibia. So after the Cuban troops withdrew out of Angola, that is when the preparation for independence for Namibia started.
SWAPO does get support though from Russia, is it not?
Yeah, it does.
I think it's just interesting to look at the position of the United States and when she's asking these questions, in this, especially in this last year in the transition process, because I spent this last year at the United Nations in the Lutheran Church office there, and the United States was maybe the most resistant country to this process of transition in some ways, to the process of South Africa leaving, and especially it's seen concretely in the support for transition forces. People that will watch the elections and make sure that the elections are fair and equal. And the U.S. resisted, certain countries pushed for a certain amount of people and money, and the U.S. resisted that increase. And so I think it's important to note that, as we're citizens of this country that says we push for democracy and freedom, that we haven't been one of the most helpful countries in Namibia getting its independence. And I guess I could also say that the Lutheran Church, as a group that's not a government group, has been one of the most helpful, I think, just in the United Nations community in New York. It pushed very hard and has worked very hard on this through the United Nations. But I think when we ask questions about what other countries are doing to Namibia, we need to also ask what the United States is doing, and especially what it can do with Walvis Bay in the future, because Walvis Bay is very important to the future of Namibia. And one more thing, and then I'll be quiet, is that Randolph said the United Nations has resisted for some time, or has been slow in pushing for the independence of Namibia, but the United Nations is a group of nations, which maybe the U.S. is one of the most powerful, for better or for worse. So when we speak of the United Nations, we have to remember that that's the United States, what the United States says, and what all the countries say, 159 countries. And we have to look at the independent countries as individual countries and what they're saying. And then we can speak to our country and what it's saying.
Thank you.
So does Namibia strive to be an unaligned country like Zimbabwe?
Pardon?
Does Namibia want to be an unaligned country like Zimbabwe? Zimbabwe is, they don't want to be supported by either the United States or Russia.
I think what the Namibians or what Namibia wants right now is freedom, and then we will worry about the other things. But Namibia depends a lot on the UN, and the UN is United States and Russia and all the other lands. So, and we don't think about United States and Russia and who, where do we want to be? Do we rather choose United States or do we rather choose Russia? We just want our independence. And I don't know, maybe we have to think about that. But it's so complex.
We'll accept the offer from everyone, anyone.
I think that question about Russia is also interesting in that it's true in Central America too, I think, and South Africa, that any revolutionary group fighting against the government that the United States supports, no matter what that group is called communist. And that's and that the media power to create that name, these are communists fighting. I mean, we have this idea that any revolutionary is, I know more about South Africa and Namibia, so I'll just talk to those, but I think that's true in Central America too. Media carries that impression then, and we're, oh my gosh, we can't have that happen. So that dictates a lot of our American attitudes and support, and I felt that as I heard that question about what about Russia, and Russia really isn't that big an issue, are they? And that's a question not to anybody.
Well, who has a voice? Swapo does not have a voice in Namibia or in most countries. I mean, the Swapo Well, in Namibia right now, most of the news, most of the media is controlled by South Africa. All the information provided to the United States, to the New York Times, to this and that, comes through South African channels, and so it is distorted. You know, Swapo does not have a voice. Swapo's, you know, unless it is channeled through first through South Africa. So,
you know, when you read the papers, I would just encourage people to look where that information is coming from. Is it coming from the churches in Namibia, who we can probably respect, or is it coming from South Africa? That's what you need to look at. And almost every time in the major newspapers that you read the news of South Africa and Namibia, it's coming from South Africa.
But South Africa has a law, the anti-communist law, and anybody against the government is called a communist, no matter what reason they're against them. And under that, they can be arrested.
On April 1st, when the transition process started, I think close to 200 people were killed by South Africa. Mm-hmm. And the missions to the United Nations got that information through the Lutheran Church in Namibia. They did not get that information through any other source, through the New York Times, through any international newspaper. What happened was the Lutheran churches in Namibia gave the information to offices in the United States that went through the Lutheran Church office in New York out to the different missions at the United Nations. And otherwise, they would not have had that information that people had been killed and that South Africa had been harassing people that were trying to return to Namibia as refugees.
Yeah, and that's why people in Namibia, well, when I was back home, I never knew what really was going on in Namibia. I was just reading this, what Republican said, and what that was just lies. And then I came over to the United States, and we got a news through the ELCA, and then we started reading it, and we saw what was really going on in Namibia. When you leave Namibia, then you start reading the stuff you got, and you think back, and you see, well, I was wrong the whole time.
And most of the colors like us learn more about our own country while we are in the States than what then. Back home, because our education, especially history, the history was written by visitors in our country. You know, it was not written by our ancestors and stuff. That's why we didn't get the real history. And the real history is in the libraries in America. We don't get it back home.
It's like most of this information we have now, you won't find it in Namibia. You will just find it here in the United States.
It's illegal.
Yeah, even books, scanner books.
Several years ago here at Holden, we had a pastor conference. We had not the bishop or the president, but the vice president, Zephaniah something or other.
Kamieta. His book.
He had been to the Lutheran World Federation meeting somewhere, and he came here. And that question was asked about SWAPO being communist, and he said, well, Namibia asked the United States for help, and the United States refused to give it help. And then they went to some European countries and asked for help, and certain countries, I think Holland, Sweden, and a couple others gave help, and Russia gave them help. And he said, why do you call us communists? Because Russian gave us help. Why don't you call us social democrats? Because Sweden gave them help. And he said, because they gave us help doesn't mean that we then became communists, or even were in any way beholden to them. Well, that was his answer to us, that we needed help and they helped us. And so we had maybe a kind feeling to them, but they did not feel at that point that they were now communists.
Thank you. Sarah?
Is the reason that there is the most oppression and physical violence happening up in the north because South Africa feels that is where the most vocal
yeah.
people are,
yeah.
or is that, I'm trying to get clear in my head why it is that
yeah, I know
that
what
area is most violent and the rest,
yeah.
it doesn't care about it. If, like the squeaky wheel gets the oil, are they getting oppressed so much because they are so...
Yeah, we are the Khaleds, and the government of South Africa, the government of Namibia, but we can call them the government of South Africa. They use the colors to oppress the black people. So if they start to kill among us, we won't be on their side anymore. The government are just a handful of people, and the rest are black, and the other handful are colored. So they need us. And they use us to oppress the black people. And I'm sorry to say this, but they succeed. When I go back home next summer, I have to go and fight against my family. I have to go, and then I have to go and sit with my mother, and I have to tell her about DTA and SWAPO, about the government that she believed in since whenever she started. So then she can say, oh, you went to America, and now you think you are better than us, you think you are wise. But, and then you can say, get out of my house or whatever, because I want to tell her what is really going on in the north, because she is one of that people that the South Africans use, and they brainwash them. And because they don't get information, and that's why they don't know about anything about the north. And since I came, I wrote letters to my sisters and to my mother, and I wrote a letter to their father too. He is a pastor, and I wrote to him, and I told him to go and talk with my family, because I don't want them to be part of all this oppression and tragedy. And then I told him to give her my letter after he spoke to her, because she can probably say, oh, you just want us to vote for SWAPO, but I will never vote for SWAPO because they are the bad guys. So I just pray for that.
When you go back, will you be taking news articles that you have gotten here back with you, or is that too illegal and you don't dare do that?
We don't know what to expect, because we will hopefully have our independence, but it will still be very dangerous to take this kind of information that we got here in the United States to take it home. So the best thing is to have everything here and then go home and then tell our people so that we can get them to fight with us.
So when you go back, there's no way to support what you say with any documented evidence at all. So they are left to say, we don't believe you because you can't document. Right?
It depends on who's going to win the election.
Yeah.
If we do, then we can take it home. I don't think there will be any problem.
Yeah, sure.
But we cannot be sure who's going to win. We cannot prepare us.
Yeah, and the other problem is SWAPO just built an office in Windhoek, so they don't have a cent. South Africa has all the money, so they buy people and they pay people to vote for them. And they make it so hard for the people to vote. South Africans that are in Namibia, they can vote if they are in Namibia for longer than 4 years. But we are in United States and we can't vote because we are not in Namibia. And there are many other rules that they have that keep us from voting. And many people doesn't have birth certificates. So they can't say I'm Johannes and I am a Namibian. Because when he was born at the house. He wasn't born in a clinic. So he doesn't have a birth certificate. So he cannot show that he is a Namibian. So he can't vote.
Have you any idea what percentage of the people can participate in elections? Is literacy also a factor?
Yeah, sure.
It sure is.
It is. So, and that is why the SWAPO and UN, they will pay for some of for Namibian students that apply. They will pay for one-way ticket to go home. Because we know so that we can go and help the people. Many of the people can't read or write. So we have to tell them, you have to sign here and not there. Because if you sign there, then you will sign for the wrong people. And this sign is for SWAPO and this sign is for DTA. So we have to go and tell them and teach them all that stuff. But we can't go home because then we will miss our school and we can't pay for the other way. So we have to stay here and finish our studies and then go home.
What can the people here do as individuals and in their churches back when they go home? What can they do to help their people?
Mine both through the mail.
We will appreciate letters from Namibia. I put the addresses on the board, and we didn't do much when we came. I spoke several times, like once or twice in a church, and I tried to speak once at my college, but no one showed up. So I went back to my room, and I didn't try again. And so I wrote the things on the board with, you can read and stay informed, you can write letters of support to Namibia and here's the addresses. You can do education in your churches. And you can, and the most important thing of all of this five things is you can include us in your prayers. And then the financial support.
Yeah.
What are the three of you studying, and what do you hope to do when you go home?
I'm studying theology right now, and I would like to be a theologian. I don't think I want to be a pastor. I just want to teach it. It's very interesting, and I really just want to teach it and carry my knowledge over to the other Namibians, because our theology program is not, I mean, in the high schools and stuff. We do not really have a theology program. And I think it's really important that we do have one.
So you'd like to go to seminary here in the United States?
I might go to seminary for 1 year in my country and then come back over here.
And yeah, I'm studying occupational therapy and I'm into psychology. So I think when I go back, I have to start in a hospital.
I'd like to do a remedial education. It's where you work with handicapped people, and in Namibia they really need these kind of people, and the people they have now, it's like, how much? My mom told me it's about 7
Seven physical therapists.
Seven that's working with these handicapped people. Not, it's like
it's
teach
not
them.
Physical therapists.
People that can read and that can write, these kind of people. And these seven people is just white people. So if I finish, I will be the first colored. If I go in that and I finish it, I will be the first colored that was doing that. And they really need it.
Yeah.
Where are you going to school? Where do you go to school?
Me?
Well,
yes.
We are Texas Lutheran College.
Where?
Texas Lutheran College in Seguin.
I'm in New Jersey. Uppsala College, New Jersey.
Yeah. One other idea, and this is just starting for our congregation, so I don't know what the impact will be, but we, our Church and Society Committee wrote to the Lutheran Church in Namibia and was given a sister congregation to develop a relationship with, and this is just beginning. But I think because Namibia is 80% Lutheran, is that right?
Yeah.
The most Lutheran country
right.
in the world, then that would be a useful thing for congregations in this country to do. They wrote back very quickly with the sister congregation.
Is there any more questions?
Hold up the Namibia, or the
oh,
Namibia
yeah.
concerns.
We have, if you want to borrow this book, you are free and then you can just return it to us. And we have other, yes, yes. We have the Namibian newsletter. If you want it, we can give you the address where you can find it, and then
yeah.
you can get information.